Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
The Israel Report brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov. I was listening to Omer Adam singing about Tel Aviv, which links quite nicely to this report that I've read about millionaires living in Tel Aviv. We spoke a few weeks ago about how it used to be known about how to make a small fortune in Israel, which of course was to come with a big fortune. But these days, Israelis are managing to really make some money. I think the high-tech industry is obviously a big contributor to that, but not only. But Henley Global Citizens has published this report about global millionaires, publishing which are the richest cities in the world in terms of how many millionaires live there. New York, by far, of course, the top city in the world where that's concerned. A millionaire is defined as somebody who has $1 million worth of investable assets. So that includes cash, savings accounts, investments in stocks, government bonds, mutual funds. Of course, doesn't include the property that you live in. So if your property is worth $1 million, that doesn't necessarily classify you as a millionaire, according to this report. And although it was interesting for me to read that Tel Aviv is the second richest city in the Middle East in terms of the number of millionaires living there, coming after Dubai, as far as the Middle East is concerned, what interested me more was actually the number of millionaires who live in Tel Aviv. And I couldn't have predicted this. 42,400 millionaires living in Tel Aviv.
Wow.
And apparently, of those 42,400 people, 2,260 are worth more than $10 million. There are 118 residents in Tel Aviv worth more than $100 million. And there are 12 billionaires in Tel Aviv. Now, that took me by surprise, I wanted to share that with you guys because I'm sure that the listeners have some views on this. Is that surprising for you, Howard?
Very, very. I would not have predicted that. That's a massive number. Incredible, in fact.
And it would be interesting for me to look at the report instead of counting up the absolute number of millionaires to rank it relative to the population size. That would be a very, very interesting thing. And I don't have that information, unfortunately, but it would be interesting to see how it looks when you count the number of millionaires relative to the population size of the city involved. I think that Tel Aviv would be right up there somewhere.
I'd love your reaction to that on 34519 or 061-895-1019. Are you surprised by that information? Does that take you by surprise or not? More information, Anthony, has been released about the idea of soldier killed by terrorists on Tuesday night. What has been made known?
So what we know is that the IDF officer who was killed in that clash with terrorists was Major Bar Fahal. He was the deputy commander of the Nahal Brigade's reconnaissance battalion, so a senior IDF officer out in the field, and he came from Netanya, which is where his funeral was held yesterday. And of course, when it comes to a 30-year-old young man being killed in the field, it's a very big tragedy, very, very sad indeed. His family and his partner eulogized him at his funeral. There were thousands of people who attended the funeral, both from his personal life, family and friends, as well as, of course, people from the IDF, soldiers who served with him, members of his battalion, and those who very much respected him as a senior commander. We are told that he also enjoyed skiing and surfing, and that he taught others to ski and surf, particularly surfing in his hometown in Tel Aviv. The mayor of Tel Aviv also eulogized him, had an opportunity to speak at his funeral. So a very, very big tragedy indeed. And of course, we mourn the loss of a major in the IDF and a commander and a senior member of the forces. One of the interesting things which has come out of this particular clash is that one of the two terrorists who were killed, we are told, was a member of the Palestinian Authority intelligence unit. Now, this raises up some very, very interesting things. In fact, Prime Minister Yair Lapid has come out saying that this is what he calls an escalation, because it almost looks as if though this is sponsored terrorism by the Palestinian Authority. We, as the Israeli government, cooperate significantly with the Palestinian Authority, particularly when it comes to intelligence sharing, in order to try to support the strength of the Palestinian Authority, and particularly Mahmoud Abbas as the president of the Palestinian Authority. Israel views it as being advantageous to have Mahmoud Abbas there as the president, as opposed to any number of other candidates who may be lining up to replace him, given, of course, that Abbas is already well into his 80s and is reported not to be in particularly good health. So Israel has done a lot of work to help Abbas support his position, to strengthen his position, to remain in authority. And then we have situations where people who are employed by Abbas's security apparatus are involved in terror activities against Israel. So this is a serious escalation and is not the first time that we've seen this happening. And, you know, I read another interesting report which said that when the formal notifications are made in English about deaths of individual like this, then there is very little reference made to their involvement with Fatah, which is, of course, the party which is the strongest party, the Mahmoud Abbas party, involved in the Palestinian Authority. Very little mention is made of their involvement with Fatah. And yet, when the announcement is made in Arabic, then Fatah is very much to the fore in terms of supporting and hailing the actions by this individual, terror activities on the part of a Fatah member, on the part of somebody who was employed by the Palestinian Authority. So this is almost tantamount to state terrorism, particularly with an authority that we are very much in cooperation with. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Israeli government responds to this situation, which is just slowly but surely increasing more and more as time goes on. We see more and more involvement by Palestinian Authority officials as part of some of the terror activities undertaken against Israel.
Yeah, what a mad situation. Likud leader Netanyahu has added Renegade Yamina party members to Knesset, to his Likud list for the upcoming elections. That's a bit strange, isn't it?
Well, maybe not. Maybe this is their just rewards. I mean, we're talking about Amichai Chikli and Idit Thielmann. They are two names that we are familiar with because they were two members of Naftali Bennett's Yamina party, which was in the governing coalition, and who decided at some point to no longer support the government and the governing coalition. And ultimately, that is what brought down the coalition government that we've had in power up until now. The Naftali Bennett, Yair Lapid coalition government was effectively brought down, first of all, by Amichai Chikli when he decided not to support the government, and ultimately Idit Silman, I think, was the final nail in the coffin, which resulted in the collapse of that particular coalition government. And for their actions in bringing down the coalition, Benjamin Netanyahu has rewarded them, and he's rewarded them with places on the Likud list that will go forward now. I think today is the closing day for the submission of the lists of the various parties for the upcoming election. And their names will go forward in the 14th and 16th places on the list, which have a very, very realistic chance of gaining access to a Knesset seat once the election has taken place. It is predicted that Likud will have as many as 30 seats in the Knesset. So those two individuals will safely be in where allocation of seats are concerned. And so this is their just rewards. Now, the way that things work is that there is a primary which has been held for the Likud, which ranks the Likud members in terms of the support that they get from signed up members of the Likud. It ranks all those who put themselves forward for the Knesset list, and then they are allocated to the list according to the way that they perform in the primaries. However, there are certain reserved spots for particular types of individuals, or there are certain reserved spots within the list which are then allocated to those people who qualify for that reserved spot. Now, in the case of these two individuals, the leader of the Likud has the ability to add five names to the party list. Those are reserved spots which are reserved for him to name individuals, and therefore Chikli and Idit Silman have been named in those positions by the leader of the Likud, which are those positions which are reserved for him to be able to allocate people, and therefore they will go forward and they will very, very likely be members of Knesset on behalf of Likud this time, as opposed to on behalf of Yamina as they were last time. And apparently this is their rewards for bringing the government down.
Wow. It's politics is just an unpleasant business, isn't it?
Well, you could say it like that. I think that's an understatement of reality. But yes, very much so. This is unfortunately how politics works. And if you're not very thick-skinned and broad-shouldered, then politics is not the place for you.
The foreign minister from the United Arab Emirates has arrived in Israel. What's the purpose of the visit?
The purpose of the visit is to mark 2 years since the Abraham Accords were signed with the United Arab Emirates. Now, again, that was something that caught me a little bit by surprise, because I hadn't expected 2 years to have passed already. I remember speaking about this only, it feels like yesterday or the day before, when we were talking about the signing of the Abraham Accords and how this has been developing. But 2 years have passed, and in order to mark that occasion, Abdullah bin Zayed, who is the foreign minister of the United Arab Emirates, has arrived in Israel, and he will meet with Prime Minister Yair Lapid later today in an official meeting at his office. They will first start with a short private meeting that will be followed by a broader working meeting to include some of their aides. And then they will, later this afternoon, each give a televised statement before a party this evening, a reception this evening, that will be hosted by the United Arab Emirates diplomat in Israel in honor of the anniversary of the Abraham Accords signed with the United Arab Emirates. And amongst those people who apparently will attend the reception this evening is President Isaac Herzog and his wife Michal, and they are due to also attend. So I think this is a big deal. I think this is a big occasion. And I think that when celebrating anniversaries of this type, I think it is absolutely right, first of all, to have senior diplomats, senior individuals, representatives of the government meet up to come to Israel if possible, but potentially for some of our government officials to go there too, in order just to bond further the great relationship that has already been developed over the last couple of years. It really feels like we've gone a massive distance, really a long way, in a relatively short period of time in getting these Abraham Accords working and really feeling the benefits of peace agreements between two countries.
What is amazing is, and I don't know if it's just my social media, but there's a tremendous amount of natural warmth. It doesn't feel like this relationship is a contrived one.
I agree with that. And, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think that it was very, very easy for the UAE and Israel to become friends very quickly and for individuals to feel comfortable. The amount of tourism that goes to the United Arab Emirates, to Dubai, to Bahrain, to countries from Israel, people are traveling there all the time. There's a massive amount of tourism. And I think it was easy because of the fact that we are not neighbors. Where the neighbors are concerned, there's a certain history, there's a certain antagonism that exists because of what's gone on in the past. And the UAE has been somewhat removed from all of that. They may well have supported behind the scenes, but we don't feel as if that we've had a face-to-face conflict with them as we have done with Lebanon, with Syria, with Jordan, with Egypt, with other countries, with the Palestinian Authority as well, that we feel that there's been this face-to-face coming together, conflict between each other, which when the friendship eventually arrives, as it has done with Jordan and with Egypt, it's much, much more difficult to feel the warmth and to develop things. Whereas with the United Arab Emirates, also with Morocco, I think the same can be said. It's a little bit further away. No face-to-face conflict has ever transpired. So therefore, being friends right away is a relatively easy thing to do.
Yeah, which really is, which you can see. And that's what I'm finding, is that it really does seem like a natural friendship. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. That was the Israel Report, brought to you by the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.